This is WGN Radio. John Williams here. John Beaver's on the line, the president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates. What's the number, John? What's the reaction been today?
Well, we've got the market in a pickle as a result of inflation. The reading today was 1% for the month, 8.6% year over year, and it does not look like inflation is cooling. Wages are not keeping up. Rates in the Fed appear to be behind the curve. Energy is making the situation worse. A recession may be unavoidable at this point in time. And so the investor and the consumer are feeling pretty pessimistic.
The numbers I'm looking at now on the Dow and the NASDAQ, 845 and minus 408, 845 down on the Dow. Is that the market also telling us they didn't think it would be that bad?
Yes, the market was hoping for something. They were looking for cooling on the inflation, and it didn't come out that way. So we're at least probably going to double bottom to where we were a couple of weeks ago in the market and possibly push even lower. We've got a target range on the S&P 500 of around 3,700. Currently at 40. Pardon?
Keep going, sir.
Yeah, currently at 3,903, so not too far away from where we are at this point in time.
And then does the Fed do something about this as a result? Or, I mean, who does what next, the big picture?
So the Fed tells us they're really not watching the market. They're watching inflation. And right now it looks like the Fed's going to continue to move at a 0.5% each month. That would be June, July. They take August off and then September. Jay Powell has indicated he doesn't want to do more than 0.5%. But it's sounding like that's probably a mistake. He probably needs to stomp on the brake pedal a little bit harder and send the message. With being behind the curve, the market is looking for the Fed to do what it needs to do. And the market does not want to see the Fed, you know, work around the edges. They want to see the Fed go right at this thing head on straight and cool inflation.
Wasn't a criticism of the Fed that they were behind the curve, that they should have raised interest rates before this happened, and now that it's happening right before our eyes, they still seem to be, even 0.5% a month isn't timid, but I take your point that maybe now's the time to be more aggressive than you're comfortable with. You haven't been all along.
Yeah, and it appears that the Fed has lost control of inflation at this point in time. That's what the market seems to be saying, clearly behind the curve, been behind the curve for quite a while. We look for what's called the terminal rate. That's where their rate, the short-term rate, equals the inflation rate. Well, if we've got inflation running 8 to 9%, and they're right now sitting at 1%, there's a lot of movement that has to take place there, and going 0.5% a month is not going to be enough.
Yeah, but I don't suppose anybody wants to see them be that aggressive, right? I mean, I guess all you can do is I guess what you need to do is just ride this thing, is what it sounds like now.
Yeah, the problem is the slower they go, the longer they're going to be drawing out the decline in the market. And it just perpetuates that inflation problem. So they really need to take care of it right away. Yes, it'll be painful. The market will drop on the news. But it might turn around pretty quickly because, again, the market would be seeing the Fed is serious about this. They're getting the inflation under control.
What you just said is based on them doing 0.5% a month for 3 months?
No, they need to do more than that. And the discussion right now seems to be, should they be doing 0.75% this month, or should it actually be a full percent? Full percent would definitely send a message. I don't think they'll do that because that doesn't seem to be the way that Jay Powell wants to approach this.
So then we'll pause here. But then, John, tell us about people's investments, people who have recently retired a long time ago. They're looking at numbers that keep shrinking. I wonder what options they have. John, talk to me a little bit about what people who are retired should be thinking about. What do you tell those folks today?
Yeah, well, the first thing is we remind them that investing is not easy. They know that. This has been a difficult year for investors. And these come along about once every 4 years. So the first thing is remind yourself, investing is difficult. This is one of those challenging years, one out of four. Second thing is to not let that turn you pessimistic and let the emotions take over, because then we'll be making poor decisions. So after that, the newer retirees need to remind themselves of their runway or their time frame. If you know your time frame, then you can portion your investments appropriately. So So as a new retiree, how much of your portfolio do you need to draw on in the next 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Your money that you don't need 10 years down the road, that can remain invested in the market. The money that you need in the next 3 years should never be in the market. And then between those 3 and 10 years, you work with your advisor to come up with the right plan for that. So what we find is that sometimes when people enter retirement, they put too much money into safety because they don't want to take any losses at all. Well, the problem with that is that in an environment like this especially, your short-term conservative investments do not keep pace with inflation at all. Stocks are a good way to protect against inflation. So by understanding that time frame, you can build a portfolio appropriately and then look at a day like this and go, this is just fine. This is, you know, this is what's expected. I mean, the market at this point in time, as measured by the S&P 500, is down almost 19%. We're very close to that 20% that marks a bear market. Bear markets also create buying opportunities. And if you have some of that money on the sidelines that, you know, you've moved your 7-year money into a conservative bucket, maybe with the market lower, you can move some of that money back into a growth bucket.
And that's not timing the market. It's just recognizing that it's down 19%, and if you got back to zero, you'd be up 19%.
Right. And the market could go down another 10% from here. We're not saying that this is the bottom.
I understand that, but I just humor me for a minute. Because everybody like you always says, well, never try and guess the bottom. That's a loser's bet. And I understand that. But I do know that I'm right. I'm not saying that 19% is as low as it's going to go. But I'm also saying that I believe it's going to get better than it is now. So if I waited a little longer and it went lower still, maybe I would have been even smarter. But I don't need to be that smart. I'll take getting into the market now, knowing that it is, even if it goes lower, it's still going to go higher than we are now, right?
That's correct. We're back to the levels, you know, back to the levels where we were at the beginning of last year is what we're starting to look at now. So, and again, we could go lower, which just creates a better buying opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then, but I wonder if some people who have recently retired or been retired for a while, and having heard everything you said, are still looking at a number that is 20, 30, 40% less than it was once upon a time. And they're thinking, I should have kept working, or I want to go back to work. I want to find income now to replace these paper losses. What do you say to people that feel that way?
Yeah, so if they've done their plan at the beginning, upon retirement, the right way, they can weather these storms by having the money on the sidelines that they need this year, next year, 3 years down the road, even 4 or 5 years down the road, so they don't have to go back to work. That's the key, is making sure that you've got that right mix, not based on your age, not based on some arbitrary 60-40 mix, but based on your particular needs for cash flow from your portfolio.
So where does that money go? Where, is it literally in the bank, just, you know, and watching inflation nibble away at it? Where does that money sit?
So very short term, it could go in the bank, money you need in the next 3 months. Some of it can be invested in short term bonds. Right now, the Treasury I-bond is looking very attractive.
Yeah.
It pays interest based on inflation. Now, you can't put a lot of money in there. It's $10,000 per year per person. But for a married couple, that's $20,000 per year that they can put in there. And if they keep rolling that every 5 years, just keep putting money in every year, that can be their 1 to 5 year money, protected against inflation.
Boy, that's all we were talking about a few weeks ago when these numbers started to hit, and everybody was just transfixed by that number. Kind of forgot about it the last few weeks, but that's still not a bad idea, right?
Right. And the thing to remember is now the comparisons are going to get a little easier on inflation, right? We're comparing to higher numbers a year ago. So we should see this inflation rate start to moderate. And as inflation goes up, as interest rates go up, the economy will naturally go through a slowing process. This is very similar to World War II. So many things are similar to post-World War II. We've got supply chain disruptions. We're having to retool our factories. We've got disruptions in employment. And we've got a shortage of natural resources. And we had very volatile inflation the first 6, 7, 8 years post-World War II. We went up to 10%, down to negative 2, back up to 10, down to negative 1, and eventually settled in at about a 3% average for that 7, 8, 9 year period of time. Hmm. And it could be that that's what we're looking at here.
Okay, John, I'm going to leave you with that. John Beaver, the financial advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services. Click on phase3advisory.com. That's the number 3 in the middle, phase3advisory.com. It's good to hear your voice today, John. Thanks.
You're welcome.
The festival season kicks off. Hank Zamola joins us now, the CEO at Special Events Management. You hear about all the neighborhood fests. Of course, Lollapalooza is coming up. Pride is in June. And Hank, this is your business, huh? This is kind of what you do. Is that right?
That's correct. 34 years later, we're going strong.
What do you do? Do you set up the stages? I didn't know that that was a kind of niche industry. Tell me a little bit about your work.
So we're a little bit different in our model. We're what you would call a full-service company. We don't outsource. We have everything in-house. So we have marketing, public relations, sponsorship sales. We have a whole vending department that works with the city and people trying to participate in events so they get licensed. We have the stages. We have, you know, the barricades for the equipment. And we also, you know, have a couple of people that seek new business. And I can tell you that the business has been booming since, you know, the end of COVID or, you know, kind of the end of COVID.
Yeah, no kidding. For instance, give me an example.
Well, you know, we all, in event planning, where we all have our dates to get by. But so the last couple of weeks of June and first week of July, and then, you know, obviously the 4th of July, but we've got Chicago Pride Fest, Pride in the Park, which is a separate event in Grant Park, Civic Concerts. We have the Pride Parade, which we produce too. And then we have the Chosen Few Old School Picnic Reunion that is in Jackson Park. It's a wonderful event. In the middle of all this, we've got a really nice running event, all lawyers. It's called Race Judicata, and about 6,000 people, again, in Grant Park.
No
and
kidding.
We go out to Lake Forest for the 4th of July. So, yeah, so we're scrambling a little bit, but I will say we've been fortunate with our labor. We've been pretty good.
I'm glad to hear all of that. It's funny, too. You mentioned I come up and down Lakeshore Drive a lot. So I'm driving by Millennium Park and Grant Park a lot. And I will sometimes see tents and whole areas with thousands of people. And I think to myself, how is it I don't know about this? But there's so many events, so many festivals, so many runs. I didn't know there was one for attorneys. That's what you said, right?
That's correct. They run to raise money for Chicago Volunteer and Legal Services for people that can't afford legal services.
Yeah.
There's an option here where they'll help out, and they're great fundraisers. It's a good program.
So I guess 2020, much of 2021, you had to shut down, huh?
Well, you know, this is a topic we don't talk about it much, but where everybody else basically shut down, we reinvented ourselves. So we set up 9 super COVID sites with, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 people getting vaccinated. And then we started working with all the different restaurants and with the Illinois Restaurant Association for permitting, equipment. We became a liaison between the city and, you know, a lot of restaurants that are trying to do the outdoor dining and do it, you know, in step with all the requirements. So we serviced over 250 restaurants, made some new and great relationships, but it wasn't like a regular year. But it paid all the bills. And, you know, I even with our bankers, we're talking, they're like, how did you do it? Like, we got creative.
Yeah. It says something about American entrepreneurialism or something, right? I mean, you're not the only business. A friend of mine runs a whiskey business. Now he found himself making hand sanitizer for a while. Now he's back to making whiskey and bourbon again. And you just pick the part of the economy. The people that make Hartshaffner Mark suits in Chicago were making, at the beginning of the pandemic, face masks, and they were cranking them out because we weren't buying business suits. It I don't know that it's encouraging, but there's something good about the creativity and the energy of business people in Chicago.
It's amazing. As you were speaking, I was thinking of Sam Sanchez. He's the chairman of the Illinois Restaurant Association.
Yeah.
He owns several bars and restaurants, and he did the same thing. He went to mask making. He started with the outdoor dining, hand sanitizer. So he didn't wait. He kind of grabbed the bull by the horns, like, there's a niche business here, and I'm going to, you know, work that business until this is over. And I kudos to him.
Yeah, no kidding. So what's one of the events that you're working on now? Did I see Well Street? You got something coming up?
We do. It's the Well Street Art Fair. It's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. It's from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. I think it's one of the finest art events in Chicago. A little something for everybody. There's music. There's a children's area. We've got about 160 artists from 35 different states throughout the U.S., a couple international artists. We see early in the day a lot of families. We see midday, a little transition. We do have a stage with some music. So, you know, by 4 p.m., we see a little bit more music-related people. But it's just a great event, and it's great for the local economy, all the bars and restaurants up and down Well Street. We're on between North Avenue and Division. And this is our 47th year. It's been a long steadfast event.
June 11th, June 12th, what do you know? Here we are. Hank Zamola, CEO at Special Events Management, the people making things like that run smoothly. Good to talk to you, Hank. Congratulations. Thanks for giving us some of your time, and thanks for doing the work you do in town.
Yeah, thank you so much, and I hope you have a good afternoon.
Yeah, what an interesting story. It's 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Several private equity firms are interested in buying Chicago's Grubhub. Bloomberg says the interested parties include Apollo Global Management. Grubhub is now a unit of JustEatTakeaway.com. The report says the company may have a tough time getting a price near the $7.3 billion it paid for Grubhub just last year. The offers are likely to come in much lower, at about $1 billion. Several investment firms have been considering teaming up with Grubhub co-founder Matt Maloney, who's interested in getting his company back. Chicago-based McDonald's is trying to speed up the drive-through experience, particularly wait times in line. And to get that done, the company is cutting some healthy food from the menu. Nutritious menu options like grilled chicken sandwiches, salads and fruits, and yogurt parfaits are gone and likely won't return anytime soon. Menu cuts have allowed McDonald's to shave about 30 seconds off its drive-through wait times over the past few years. Local operators are happy about the menu cuts because the healthy items had lower demand and required longer prep time. McDonald's still offers apple slices and oatmeal with fruit. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and the business of Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell, is here again to talk about growing food and flowers and whatnot.
Hello.
And, Jim, there are some of us who either don't have the room for a garden or just physically can't do it. Got any ideas?
I do have some ideas. As a matter of fact, planters and containers work for practically any garden. There are patios and decks and galleries and porches and railings, and especially high-rises. You know, we have a lot of cliff dwellers here in the Chicago area. Containers are adaptable and can be planted up to all kinds of things. First of all, it's important to have the right kind of container. It can be a pot or an urn or a box or a planter or whatever. The important thing is it must have drainage. This means it's got to have holes in the bottom, or you have to have a container with a liner in it with holes in it, and you can drain it away. You can empty out the drainage water. You can siphon it out or dump it out, whatever. You need a good potting soil, not a garden soil. Garden soil will not work because it doesn't drain. The brown potting soil mixes work very well. Now, the kinds of plants are important, too. There are many kinds right now that are designed for containers. This is ornamental plants as well as vegetable plants. Patio tomatoes, patio cucumbers, those are very popular right now, and they don't get so big like they would out in the garden itself. They maintain their size and composure in a container. For taller kinds of plants, you need to use some kind of a support, a trellis of some kind. Also, the kinds of plants that you grow in containers can change with the season. If you have spring flowers that get old and they don't flower anymore, they don't flower quite as well, change them off to something growing currently. And then in late summer when they begin to get kind of ragged, there are lots of things that you can use for fall. Mums, for instance, will fill out a container very nicely.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, next Friday he'll tell us what to do to keep those plants from dying when we go on vacation. June Dairy Month continues, and today is National Black Cow Day. That's a cream-based drink with chocolate and root beer, and I understand some adults use bourbon. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk a little bit about electric vehicles. One of the concerns you have if you buy one of those things, and one of the reasons maybe you haven't, is your reservation about charging them. Albert Walters is the executive director, of something called Powering Chicago. Albert, it's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you for having me.
Now, that's probably the nut of this, right? I think a lot of people like the look of those things. We like that they're emissions-free. The prices come down. But the lingering concern are charging those batteries, right?
Absolutely. Well, that is one of the concerns. Of course, there are a lot of initiatives to help drive the mass adaptation of the electrical vehicles in our city and in our state. But the most important thing is to have a safe, reliable, and accessible charging station available wherever you may be. And, of course, there's incentives that have been created to help spur that adaptation. And one such thing here in Illinois is the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency providing a fund that will basically cover up to 80% of Level 2 and Level 3 charger installations costs. This includes the labor. This includes the materials, everything that's associated with creating that infrastructure to help spur Illinois' goal for having over 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030.
A million electrical vehicles on the road by 2030. When you talk about those two different level of charging stations, are those at stores or public places, or are those residential?
Well, that's a great question. And this covers residential, stores, any kind of infrastructure that will be implementing Level 2 and Level 3 chargers. Of course, Level 2 chargers require, 240 volts. However, the Level 3 chargers are the faster chargers, and therefore it takes a little bit more work and really a little bit more education as far as installing those particular charging units and expertise, and that's where Power Chicago and its partners come in. Of course, I didn't even get a chance to explain what Power Chicago is, but Power Chicago is the unique labor and management partnership between the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 134, and the Electrical Contractors Association of Chicago and Cook County.
So these are the guys that actually install those things? They're the ones that do the work?
Absolutely. So we make up the unionized electrical industry here in Chicago and Cook County. And we've been involved in the renewable energy sector for quite some time. In actuality, if you've traveled the roads on 294, you might have seen this sprawling wind turbine right off of 294 with this large solar array. Well, we've been training our individual workforce and contractors in a renewable and sustainable energy sector since 2015. So we're highly equipped to install this new infrastructure. Well, the infrastructure, it's not new to us, but we're highly equipped to install the infrastructure that will be on our city's roads and even in our residences in the upcoming years.
Did you mention some sort of incentive program or some sort of underwriting of these costs?
Yes. So what I mentioned was the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency providing a charging incentive program, and that is to cover up to 80%. Of course, there's a lot of incentives to spur the adaptation of the transformation and electrification of transportation, and that is incentives for cutting down the cost of purchasing the vehicle. However, there is still going to be a large cost associated with the infrastructure, and that's where these incentive programs come in. And in order to take advantage of these particular incentives, you're going to need qualified electrical contractors to install those equipments. And that's where the first step for those who are actually looking to invest in this technology need to take, and that is visiting Power Chicago's website, where we have individual contractors that are what we like to call the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Training Program. They're certified in this. And the EVITP is a program that sets the standards for making sure that you have a safe, reliable installation when it comes to the infrastructure.
That's poweringchicago.com. We got to wrap this up, Albert, but what's the demand like and the supply like of electricians these days?
That's a great question. That's a wonderful question. Well, to sum it up, the demand for a qualified electrician is ever more increasing. And what we're doing and seeing on our end is we're preparing for that demand. And we've always been prepared for that demand. But what we're doing, even that's more incredible, is we're reaching out to those particular industries and sectors that don't get an opportunity to take advantage of this this lifestyle or to be a union electrician. And that means that we're reaching out to neighborhood high schools, Leo, Prosser, Juarez, to get them access. Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I think there's a number of conversations there we'll have another day, but let's get more people in the trades. Let's get them union certified, qualified, and have them do this work, and I'm glad to hear you're on that. Albert Walters is the executive director. Click on poweringchicago.com. Albert, let's visit again, but thanks for your time today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.